What's up? Welcome to another edition of Canucks Talk here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Do you always refer to new episodes as additions?
Uh-huh.
That's like
quite frequently, yes.
Okay. I don't know why I never
Thank
noticed
Thank you for
it.
Paying attention.
You're welcome. It's like Canucks Talk volume.
Yeah.
I don't know. What show number are we on?
Well, this would be volume 3 because it's our third season of doing it.
Oh, addition.
Right? And then it would be, yeah.
That's how you're going?
That's here. how you're sorting it, isn't it?
Well, and we're definitely up to the standard
that's
of an
right.
academic journal.
Peer reviewed. Very, very high standards here. But yeah, that's, I don't know, every show. I call it a new edition.
Like 90%.
But fairly often, I would say. Fairly often.
I've been reviewed by my peers, and they found me wanting.
They were like, eh, no thank
Drantz
you.
Drantz has definitely been reviewed by his peers.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A big show today. A couple of great guests. Ryan Clark, our pal from ESPN, will join us at 1. And we get another go-around with Yannick Hansen here because there's no people show today because of the early game in Chicago. So Yannick Hansen will join us at 1:30
Will we ask him about the gritty?
100% we will.
Yes, we will.
100% we will.
Do you
How
like
long can we talk about the gritty?
Do you like gritty talk? You're in the right place.
Man, one of my bits of my routine of show prep every morning is around, I don't know, 9 a.m.
You hit the gritty.
I log on and check out the... yeah, just getting psyched up for the show.
I love that.
I log in and check out...
Get the blood flowing. You refer to it as your calisthenics. Just Jamie gritty.
Doing
the
gritty
living room.
For no one. I check out the Dunbar Lumber text line to see what people were talking about during Halford and Brough, and today it was like overwhelming text after text after text involving the word gritty. I was like, oh boy, we are really doing this. So yes, we will continue that conversation with Yannick Hansen, probably asking about the Morgan Riley incident as well, slap shots into the empty net and all of that. Lots going on to get into with our guests, but as mentioned, it is a Canucks game day. They're in Chicago, so let's start with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
Canucks wrapping up. We'll start with the headlines. The Canucks wrapping up their 5-game road trip against the still Connor Bedard-less Chicago Blackhawks. He's getting closer to a return, but will not factor in tonight, which means the Canucks will not face Connor Bedard this year. Actually, do they play them one more time now that I mentioned that? Do they have one more against him?
This is three.
Is this three already?
Yeah, this is three.
All right. So they did play him once earlier.
They did in November. Yeah.
After, what am I talking
about? It was on the second leg of a back-to-back they played the Wild, and they won.
All right.
Because Chicago's not very
Chicago,
good.
Chicago, not very good. Just as bad as it looks on paper
this
with
is one
Connor
of those,
Bedard out.
This is one of those, like, on the one hand, you finish the road trip with an exhalation, right? Like, the ability to just, like, you're very, like, on the other hand, right? If you lose this one, people get, like, more upset about it than normal. It's like the Bruins loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you go out on this road trip and your only losses are Chicago and Boston, people are mad, even though it's a good road trip. Like, the Canucks have already secured a good road trip or a successful one. They've already secured 500. They're going to win tonight. But, you know, this it feels like one of those all downside games.
Yeah, like a trap game, you might often refer to it. I mean, I don't...
Except a trap game is one you might actually lose.
Well, that's the thing. A team has to be better than the Blackhawks are, I think, for it to be a trap game. And you look at not just the fact that the Canucks are good and the Blackhawks are really bad.
Sorry, yeah.
But specifically the way the two teams are good and bad, right? Like, the Canucks have been so sound defensively. The Blackhawks have been absolutely woeful offensively. Like, they just cannot score. And I think we saw a little bit of that, like, how it could play out when the Blackhawks were at Rogers Arena not that long ago. Like, that was a sleepy effort. The Canucks still won 2-0, and it never looked like Chicago was going to score. So this is kind of a game where the Canucks' defensive structure should just be able to carry them to a win here, almost regardless of what kind of effort or how sharp they are.
Yeah, it's kind of strength on weakness
in
a really uncomfortable way for Chicago. Yeah, if this is a trap game, it's not trap like the things Indiana Jones encounters while trying to sneak into a secret temple. It's like a trap is in like Trap House. That's a trap
like
game,
trap
right?
Music.
Yeah,
sure.
I was thinking it. I wasn't sure if that's where you're going with
I don't know. I feel like a Trap House could be pretty dangerous still. So I don't know if I would use that as my like unthreatening example of
segment two. I'm coming back with trap music.
Yeah, but it's not dangerous like poison tip darts shot out of the eyes of a snake statue or something.
I mean, I guess it depends on who's encountering each trap. I think some people would choose one, some people would choose the other.
Okay,
like I would think I would trust Indiana Jones more against the poison tipped arrows than to deal with a trap house, for example.
Yeah, but would you trust yourself?
I think he'd be way out of his element.
Would you trust yourself?
That's an interesting one.
I remember watching those movies as a kid and being like, archaeology is not for me.
No, thank you.
I'm good.
Doesn't seem like something I would thrive at. So you like, look, the Canucks, heavy, heavy favorites. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on in the whiteboard. And yeah, their defensive structure, you expect a win here. I will say, as much as it's the last game of a road trip, and you know, there's a little bit of fatigue, surely. I believe this is 4 in 6 nights or 6 days for the Canucks as well. They're looking forward to coming home. You'd also like to see them snap out of the 5-on-5 offensive doldrums a little bit here too, right? Like it's not, okay, hey, a sleepy win, a win where you kind of coast and just, you know, you're way better and you're really strong defensively and you get the 2 points. That's fine. Look, go get the 2 points. But for extra credit, it'd be nice to see, you know, a crooked number put up against the Blackhawks.
Do you mean
tonight.
Goals though, or do you mean shots? Do you mean like overall pressure?
Yeah. Like a real, like take it to them. And hey, if their goalie stands on their head and that's fine and you don't convert, you only get a couple, that's fine. Okay. But like have a really dominant offensive performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's, yeah. I mean, the 5-on-5, the trend line on the 5-on-5 offense is actually really interesting to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Canucks have not, again, it's not just the goals, right? Because we've talked about how they're, shooting percentage has like very much come back to earth, right? Like last 10 games, teams only shooting 8.6%. Last six, it's, you know, sub 7%. But over the course of the last 10, it's the shot rate, 27 shots per hour. And over the last six, it's at 24. Like those are, you know, 24. I mean, you're talking, sorry, it's 25 over the last 10 games. Excuse me. That's like not good. That's very not yeah. good. That's, you know, that's what the Anaheim Ducks manage, right? Like that's pretty punchless. Now, on the other hand, that's what the St. Louis Blues manage, but the St. Louis Blues are classically attacking against the rush. So, I mean, there's off the rush. So there's ways to make your shots count. This Canucks team is good at that,
mm-hmm.
but really they're not generating enough right now. And now that you're seeing the percentages come back to earth a little bit, that becomes more apparent, right?
Yeah. And I think also, and we can talk about this a little bit more in the lineup section, but where you are integrating Elias Lindholm and now you're kind of on plan B after maybe the coaching staff didn't love the look of the first lineup with him in it, you'd like to see some positive momentum, right? Don't have it become a thing. Like, uh-oh, are we having trouble? What's the chemistry situation here? Get on a groove, get on a roll, and start, you know, reversing that trend line as far as the 5-on-5 offense is concerned.
And don't be shocked if we see another lineup. I mean, they won in overtime, but they weren't, mm-hmm. they got outplayed. Like, I mean, I don't know who's on the road. I don't think McIntyre's still there, so we might not find out.
I don't know if we're going to see until warm up. Yeah,
but I wouldn't be stunned at all if the Canucks had a new lineup tonight.
We'll talk about that in a second. But moving on quickly to the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard for today, just a couple of things. You know, not one Canucks related, the other one just interesting from a league-wide perspective. I was listening to Jeff Merrick on the Jeff Merrick Show earlier today, and I thought it was interesting that Jeff Merrick, and the word he used was wonders, he said he wonders if the Dallas Stars would be interested in Nikita Zadorov. So that, you know, he's not reporting any interest. He's not saying I've heard there's interest there. He's not saying the Canucks are shopping him. But I did think it was interesting as he was kind of just assessing the Dallas Stars and what they might be interested in, that Nikita Zadorov's name would be kind of front of mind for him. There's been some debate in this market, you know, is he really a potential to sell? But anyways, I thought that was worth passing along, that another contender in the Western Conference, in Merrick's eyes, could be a fit for Canucks defenseman Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, again, we're going to learn a lot more about how this is trending once the Canucks return home and Zadorov returns yep. from suspension and, you know, also once Soucy gets healthy. But yeah, I mean, if you're moving Zadorov, I don't think you're just moving Zadorov. You're moving Zadorov because you've
something
got something else.
100%. Right? It's step one of something, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's also a useful reminder that, you know, in the past, the Canucks have been in situations, even as recently with Andre Kuzmenko, where we were wondering how difficult would it be to move this player, right? And they ended up being able to do it in the same deal as Lindholm, and Calgary was happy to take the player, and that made things a lot easier. But there was some question there. I think it's a good reminder that Zadorov would have value, right? There's a reason the Flames were able to trade him early in the season. There's a reason the Canucks were interested. If you did need to do that as step one to making a larger move to improve your team, I think it would be relatively straightforward, as much as it ever is moving, you know, $3+ million salary in season.
But moving 3.5 million in salary, 3.25, whatever it is one thing when it's a player who's not good.
Yeah. But when people are like, I want him on our team because to help for the playoffs, then it becomes all of a sudden a lot easier.
And I mean, there's risk here too, right? Like, how good a player would you have to add for that maneuver to really be worth it? You know, obviously it depends too what the appreciation on Zadorov is, since you paid a third and a fifth for him. I mean, if you're trading him for a first, that's a no-brainer.
Yes.
But especially if you're trading him for a first and then turning around and using it to buy. But man, like 6'6", 250, toughest guy on your team from a policing standpoint, and, you know, is a really important secondary puck mover on this blue line. I really don't think that can be understated, you know, in terms of carrying the puck through the neutral zone, like gaining the blue line with your feet. After Hronek and Hughes, it's Zadorov, right? Like, he's the best at it among the other Canucks D. That's a piece that I think the club has to, you know, if they're moving on from him, it has to be done in a very calculated way and with a very, very clear upgrade coming in.
And somebody texted in, why would you move Zadorov? Are you guys running out of things to talk about him? But that's exactly it, right? It wouldn't just be moving him because, oh, hey, the prices are pretty good and we can get we'll get a second round pick for Zadorov. It would only inherently, the only way it makes any sense is if you're bringing in another player in a separate deal that you think is a significant upgrade over Zadorov. So that's why. And I do think that is a possibility. I wouldn't bet on it happening, but if you are trying to make a move to improve your top four, he's kind of the logical name to be the first step of that process. The other thing I did want to pass along, this one not specifically related to the Canucks, but I did think it was interesting. ESPN NHL reporter Emily Kaplan tweeting today. She says, 1 month out of the NHL trade deadline, biggest trend emerging is potential playoff teams selling. The Flyers, third in the Metro Division, have been actively taking calls on roster players. The Blues, Caps, Flames, Kraken, Preds, and Wild, all in the wild card hunt, could be sellers as well. And I think that's something interesting to keep in mind as we get closer to the trade deadline on March 8th and the kind of market begins to take shape, is the pool of available players could expand a little bit from what we're used to talking about, right? I mean, those are teams, that's a lot of teams, as she says, are all in the wild card hunt. It wouldn't really surprise you at this point to see any of them decide to sell some pieces.
Pretty amazing, too, that we've had sort of a shift, I think, in terms of how teams think about this. Like, if we do see a bunch of quote-unquote fringe playoff teams sell this year, what does that mean? Well, first of all, it's the last year of the flat cap era, so these teams might be prioritizing flexibility and options, especially ahead of the cap increasing over the next 2 years, as opposed to a couple games of playoff revenue. But that's a gutsy call for a hockey executive to make, right?
Yeah.
Like, to get ownership level buy-in on that ain't easy. But also, I think it reflects, you know, a sort of an understanding of how hard the cup is to win. Right, that sneaking into the second wild card spot and, you know, facing a Florida or a Boston or a Carolina right off the hop, or a Rangers right off the hop, or a Vancouver, you know, I mean, you know, if you're Nashville, get into the first round, you're facing Vancouver, Winnipeg, Colorado, or Edmonton,
maybe.
I mean, nightmare. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're not winning that series. So, I think it's an interesting trend if that's in fact how this comes to pass, especially if there's teams other than Philly who are truly like the house money team.
Yeah.
If there's other teams that do it, Seattle's the most fascinating for me, because first of all, like, Jordan Eberle's sick, but Justin Schultz is really good. And then they've got some guys signed for 2 years, like Adam Larson,
Yan Gord, yeah,
who teams would pay through the nose for, and for good reason. I mean, those could be absolutely like final finishing pieces on any cup team.
Yeah, Seattle is really fascinating there. I mean, we all know what the score of Calgary.
But the market is the key here. right? Like, that's a crowded marketplace. That's Seahawks country. That's UW country. That's Mariners country. We all know that the Sonics are coming back at some point. Seattle sports fans know. You know, the momentum of that playoff run for the Kraken last year was, like, everything. They had this, you know, excellent sort of box office buzzy performance with the outdoor game. You know, to really have the stones to pull the chute, given those market priorities, to me, that would be a very, very interesting decision.
Yes, I would be, you know, maybe Eberle, maybe Schultz, the Larson and Gord class, I have a tough time seeing move at this deadline, just for all those reasons you're laying out, but you never know. And look, from a Canucks perspective, if the market is taking shape here over the next few weeks, and not only are these bubble teams not buying, because sometimes we'll see the bubble teams say, like,
yeah,
we're not going to buy, but we're also not going to sell. You know what I mean? We're gonna hold tight. We're going to give our guys a chance to make the playoffs, but we're not going to pour resources into it. But we don't want to hamper our chances either. This is different in that they could actively sell, and all of a sudden you could be in a situation where the market could be potentially more interesting for buyers as we get closer to the deadline than we might have thought a little while ago. If all of these sellers are at least potentially interested in moving some pieces. And I just think with Jim Rutherford and his track record of aggressiveness, and we know his mindset, like, any degree to which the market becomes more friendly for buyers, you got to believe he's going to be very interested in that. And that that increases the likelihood for me that we could see another Canucks move before March 8th. So I thought that was interesting from Emily Kaplan, something that's worth keeping an eye on here as we get closer to the NHL trade deadline. Lineup notes for today. As you mentioned, Ian McIntyre, our colleague at Sportsnet, no longer covering the team on the road trip. He's back in town. You're right here, so you're not there. So no lineup update from Morning Skate in Chicago today. We'll see how things take shape in warm-up. You know, you were saying you wouldn't be surprised to see a different configuration at forward because, yeah, they got the win in Washington, but they didn't play particularly well. I kind of lean to give this group a chance to build some chemistry, right? Like, maybe if you see something that's completely not working and you really don't like, then switch it up. But I do think at a certain point, as versatile as Lindholm is, and it's great that he can play in so many different spots, you want to find a home for him too, right? So I kind of look at this as give this group a chance to build some chemistry, wait at least another game before you do the shuffle again. To me, the big question is, what's the health status on the blue line, and does Jet Wu get a chance to potentially make his NHL debut tonight? And if so, who's out of the lineup?
Yeah, given that the team didn't perform all that well, I'd just be surprised if we see JT Miller play another game on the wing.
Mm.
That more than anything is why I think we'll see a shuffle.
Right.
That's just my take.
The priority has been to get him in the middle, typically. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, Pettersson, Lindholm, you know, they did it for what, three games? Went away from it for a fourth?
Yeah.
I think if that.
They did it for two, and then they changed it up after Boston. So the 2 weekend games were
right.
Miller on the wing.
So did it for two. So yeah. He's played half and half.
Yeah.
You know, I would expect them to go back to that. And what better place to build chemistry than against the Chicago Blackhawks?
Seriously. Yeah, so maybe you look at it and say, okay, but whatever it is, okay, if you change it up tonight, then give whatever the new addition is a chance to really stick together and build some chemistry.
Yeah.
Maybe it starts with that game against a game against the Blackhawks, get a chance to get rolling, but I'd like to see some certainty here at a certain point.
Yeah, you know, this tune-up also, I guess the other way to look at it is this tune-up kind of matters in that on the other side of it, you've got Detroit, one of the hottest teams in the league, and then the Winnipeg Jets, you know, who have faded a little bit of late, but you've been neck and neck with for months at the apex of the Western Conference, excuse me. So, you know, I getting some things in order tonight would certainly be a good sign for this club.
I'll say also the other thing to consider in terms of the lineup considerations, of course, Sam Lafferty drew out in the last game, but I could see him coming back in, and would it be Phil DiGiuseppe? Could Ilya Mikheyev sit for a game given where his usage has trended? So, you know, it would feel almost a little harsh to have Lafferty out for two consecutive games. I know he hasn't had quite the same impact he was early in the season, but when he's been on that fourth line with Neil Zaman and sometimes Nils Höglander, it's been pretty effective. So I do wonder if we see Sam Lafferty draw back into the lineup as well.
Do you really think his effectiveness has declined?
Well, production. Right. Is maybe a better way to say it. But yeah. I think he's giving you a lot of those fourth line things. Like, that's been a good fourth line.
I think he's doing exactly what he'd been doing all season. It's just, you know, not shooting
goals. Goals stopped bouncing in off body parts. Funny how that happens sometimes. Playoff forecast for the Canucks. So a few games on the schedule. Vegas loses in regulation last night against Minnesota. That increases the chances that they will meet the Edmonton Oilers in the first round. Again, the stats of this break my brain a little bit, but both teams, I think it's a 70% chance that they meet in the first round. In fact, in some combination, they finish second or third, and they meet in the first round. So 70% chance, that's really, really high, and that would be the dream result in the Pacific Division for the Canucks. Canucks still with a 71% chance to win the Pacific Division per Dom's model up at the Athletic. And I did want to highlight, in terms of the Outer Town scoreboard last night, the Pacific Division and the Western Conference in general. Kraken lose to the Devils. Flames lose to the Rangers. Coyotes lose to the Flyers. I know they're still kind of in the fringes of the playoff race. The Wild did win, but like, who wants this? Who wants this final spot in the Western Conference playoff? And the answer is no one that much, I guess, because we're also hearing that these teams might be interested in selling, but it's just so striking. Nobody can get any traction in this race for the final playoff spot.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a turtle derby. It often is, right? It often is with the teams at that striver tier, right? Which is why it's not a huge accomplishment to be there.
You're cracking, by the way, down to an 8% chance to make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, so. Congratulations.
I'm still holding. As you said, it's not like anyone else is.
That's
not like,
true.
Not like anyone else has, like, put them out.
No one is.
And very seriously, what's going to happen is one team is going to run rabid hot. Like, that's what you're going to get here, typically, right? You see these teams, especially because once you get into that last 13 games of the season, like, you're going to bump into all these teams that are, like, blooding young players and, like, playing college guys and have, like, shut down stars. And the teams that want it, the teams that are playing playoff hockey against teams that are playing out the string is always massively it's a massive mismatch. So one of these teams is going to run outrageously hot for a stretch, and that'll be the team that makes it.
We'll wrap up the whiteboard with the betting odds update for tonight, and anything else going on right now, Drancer?
Just gambling odds?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Canucks are -280 consensus on the money line. They're favored by so much that it's -110 to buy the puck line for the Canucks to win by two goals.
Wow.
So, lopsided game, and despite that, 70% of the handle is on the Vancouver side. So, yeah, Canucks are going to win tonight.
Yeah,
according to the betting markets.
They are way better than the Chicago Blackhawks. Blackhawks have, I think, relatively quietly fallen below the Sharks in the standings, by the way. They now have the worst record in the NHL.
That is stunning.
Yeah, considering how bad the Sharks
I thought the Sharks were going to be historically bad. They were.
The Blackhawks are worse.
And then the Blackhawks lost every single forward available to them, and now they're worse.
And now they are somehow worse. And the Canucks get to play them tonight, looking to finish 3-1-1 on the road. It's felt underwhelming, but there's a good chance to come back 3-1-1, which is like a phenomenal result on a 5-game road trip in the NHL.
Yeah, so be awesome.
They've got a chance to do that against the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. We will continue to look ahead to that. We'll take your text as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll also hear some brief commentary from Rick Tocchet in the next segment ahead of tonight's game. That's coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.